Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. A $1.8 billion surplus package falls short in state Senate. Plus, the feds are poking around about the 2020 election. And Republicans gather this weekend for annual state convention. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 15th.
I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
And welcome to Rewind this week. Jesse, thanks for sitting for Anya.
Glad to be here.
I thought the big news would be this week about how Governor Evers and probably lawmakers had finally figured out how to spend $1.8 billion of a $2.5 billion surplus. Instead, it all fell apart. So can you tell me what happened?
Well, that's what I was going to say happened. It all fell apart.
What drove it falling apart?
Well, I mean, we started the week with Governor Evers announcing that he's got Speaker Voss, the Assembly Republicans, on board. Or, you know, he says it's bipartisan, right? So we're assuming maybe some Dem votes, definitely enough Republican votes to pass it. You wouldn't have announced it if you didn't have the votes, right? So that's assuming we've got it in the Senate, too. Assembly stayed locked in. I mean, they've been there the whole time, right? We've known the Assembly's been there. They could get this done, probably pick up some Dem votes along the way. And the Senate, as it always does, fell apart. I don't know what happened exactly with the Republican votes. We've heard a lot of conflicting stories, right, of who was there at the beginning, who was never going to vote for it, and what they may have lost along the way, but they didn't have any Democrats on board, so there it died.
Yeah, so for the record, it was 18-15 against the bill in the Senate. All 15 Democrats were three Republicans, Rob Hutton, Steve Noss, and Chris Cappio all voted against it. That's why it failed. Now, it's kind of interesting. There have been two hallmarks of the leadership approach of Governor Evers and Devin LeMahieu. Governor Evers is not a creature of the Capitol. He came up with the education establishment. He hasn't really embraced, I guess I would say, lawmakers in terms of like bringing them in the fold a lot of times. Devin LeMahieu has his caucus, which is a challenge to manage, I guess would be a nice way to put it.
That's a good way.
And it seems like this failure in some ways reflected those approaches where Senate Democrats said, you didn't bring us in the room, and some Republicans said, I don't like this from the get-go, and did Devin ever have 17 votes to begin with? So I guess I'm wondering, Jesse, did they misjudge the dynamics, i.e. Governor Evers and Devin LeMahieu, when they put this bill on the floor?
I think it was always risky to have this relying on Senate Republicans, right? I mean, it's hard to get them to a majority on anything. So I've also heard that when Senate Democrats were brought into the negotiations, they were asking for things that were definitely not going to happen with Republicans in the conversation. So, you know, Governor Evers obviously got there on the rebates, which Senate Republicans were pretty clear that they wanted the whole time. Sounds like maybe they thought that that was enough to deliver that, and it sounds like probably that's what they were hearing from Devin LeMahieu, But yeah, I mean, I guess I would never count on Senate Republicans to carry something through necessarily on something contentious.
Well, Steve Noss immediately said this thing was not good. Chris Cappia, I can't remember last time he voted yes, anything that spends any money.
Yeah.
So that puts you short of 17 votes immediately. It seems like Devin may have played political chicken with Senate Democrats of, okay, your governor reached this deal. Are you really Jeff Smith going to vote no when you're up for election in a swing seat this fall? Jamie Wall, Sarah Kayeski in swing seats who won 2 years ago, are you guys going to vote no? Bob Wirch, you've often broken ranks. Yeah. Are you going to vote no? And apparently the answer was yes, they're all going to vote no. We have some video you talked about, like what Senate Democrats wanted. Diane Hesselbein talked to us on the floor. Some video of her saying like what happened as she was brought into what do you want and came back and found out we don't care what you had to say. Let's watch that video.
This is a completely reckless proposal stitched together in a backroom deal by three people who will not be running around and won't be here when the consequences of a multi-billion-dollar deficit comes home to roost. We had one discussion, I came back to my caucus. I said, I got to run this by them, see what they said. I came back to the room. The Assembly Republicans were caucusing. I was told nobody was interested in what we had to say.
Something that I know I've talked about in this room quite a bit, and I know colleagues on both sides of the aisle have, but we finally have a chance to really do something about it. Something that has been the top priority of our state's veterans groups for as long as I can remember. And I've certainly had an opportunity to bring it forward as far as extending tax relief, property tax for disabled veterans and surviving spouses. Along with that, relief for those that have been impacted by disasters throughout our state.
These are things that are very strategically thought out when this was put together. And I think it's a pretty good package, and I think it's a yes. When I look at what is in this bill, it's a yes. And on both sides of the aisle, I think we can take a victory lap because this is giving money back to the people that paid it in.
So now, Jesse, we included Andre Jacques in that video because there was an amendment that got his support and tried to get Rob Hutton's but failed. And so to explain this to people at home, the Assembly took up the bill basically simultaneously and added an amendment very quickly with two provisions in it. One was an expansion of a property tax program break for veterans, disabled veterans, and surviving spouses. The second was $20 million in disaster grants that mirrored a bill that Rob Hutton wrote. We heard Andre just now say how great this was. That's why he voted yes. But Rob Hutton voted no. And I caught him afterward, and Hutton said, well, one, he never asked for that provision to be put in. Number two, he thought the entire thing was fiscally responsible because we spend too much money as it is, and we should have spent more money back to taxpayers and rebates. So they went for broke with Rob Hutton without asking Rob Hutton, what do you want or what do you need? An interesting leadership style, would you say, going that route?
I was pretty shocked, I think, when you reported that Hutton hadn't asked for that, didn't want it. I don't know what happened there.
Well, it's the horse trading trying to find votes, and we found out, you know, from Democrats, and the rumors were everywhere about what they asked for, how reasonable the demands were. Democrats obviously try to couch it as, we asked for things that were doable to get us. Republicans it was pie in the sky. Either way, this now is going to be an issue this fall. Yeah. Jeff Smith is on record voting no. Robin Vining in the Assembly voting no. I'm sure the Senate GOP will remind voters of that. One question I have is on the campaign trail come fall, if you're an Assembly Republican in a swing seat, do you say, well, I tried, but I didn't? Like, is there a mail piece that says, Todd Novak voted for $1.8 billion in relief. You just didn't get it. I'm not sure how effective that message is on the campaign trail. But speaking of campaigns, there are politics at play, like always in this. We all have heard about how Tom Tiffany or his staff were making calls to the Republicans to say, I don't like this. So we know he was opposed to it. Let's talk about the entire gubernatorial field, because immediately we have like these tears break out on the contenders. So let's first look at the solo supporter, I guess you could say, Missy Hughes, came out right away saying, well, not right away, but like the day after, saying she liked this thing. Then went after Tom Tiffany and certain self-serving Democrats, a little interesting tact on Thursday, that they were opposed to it. I think the quote was, certain self-serving Democratic candidates for governor who would rather boost their own personal political ambitions than serve our kids and taxpayers. Now, Jesse, I don't think we're playing nice in the primary more. What do you take of what she did and why she's saying these things about this deal?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. I think, first of all, this is just, it's a politically popular thing, right? Like, and Tom Tiffany getting involved, I think, makes it a little messier, right? Because you could say, you know, these Democrats voted against sending more money back to schools, more money back to you, the taxpayer. And the responses that I've seen from Democrats so far who voted against it, I think it was Kaylin Haywood put out a 7-minute video explaining the vote against it. No one's watching a 7-minute video to find out why you voted against this. So, you know, Missy Hughes, it made sense for her to support this. She's pretty aligned with Governor Evers on a lot of things. And she hasn't gotten a lot of traction in the primary so far. She's been polling pretty low. Why not, if you support it, you know, go out on a limb and say something? The other option there was, you know, like a Kelda Royce who said totally against it, Francesca Hong totally against it. And then you kind of had that middle of the road, like, well, you know, we were aligned with the governor, so we're not. I don't know. You know, I still don't know whether Mandela Barnes was supporting it or opposing it, and they never said. So,
let's talk about that middle tier. And I put them as Sarah Rodriguez, Mandela Barnes, and David Crowley, who we want a dem trifecta. So that was really kind of the message of, we like parts of this. Mm-hmm. We don't like the entire thing. But if you have a dem trifecta, we could really do some stuff. And my impression, especially with Senate Democrats, was they're only measuring the drapes in the Senate leadership office over there. They think they're going to be in power for sure. They feel good about a trifecta. They didn't want to spend this money for a couple of reasons. One, you're taking it away from what we could do with it that we wanted. And two, they're saying we're worried about the economy. Things go south. We need this cushion. And two, we're about the structural deficit, which I've been here for a long time. I haven't heard many Democrats talk about the structural deficit as a concern, so a new one, but still.
New. Yeah.
So with Sarah, Mandel, and David, I mean, is it just like, hey, you should give us the money to spend it, you know, or use it as we see fit come January?
It seems like that's the argument. I did notice, you know, David Crowley was a little bit more in favor of the proposal after it didn't pass. He said, well, you know, this is hard to defend. But I think that seems to be the argument. That's certainly what Greta Neubauer said yesterday at the West Politics luncheon. She said, you know, we feel pretty good about having a trifecta. It's in our sights. And interestingly, he said, you know, with good economic growth, we could spend this money well. Well, the economic growth factor was also the argument against spending the money right now. I got to say, I kind of felt like Democrats were twisting themselves in some pretzels this week.
Would you say that these guys are trying not to offend Tony Evers as well in the process?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean,
now, the opposed candidates. All right, so we'll get to Tiffany last, but Francesca Hong, Kelda Royce, Joel Brennan. So Hong and Royce voted no, were out right away. Brennan's kind of interesting because he was part of the Evers administration. He was helped craft Tony Evers' budgets. So did any of these three stick out to you as being unique in their opposition to this package?
I thought it was interesting for Brennan to go. I mean, I think we expected, based on things that they've said about education spending, things they've said about previous budgets, votes against previous budgets, Francesca Hong and Kelda Royce to be against this. And also, especially for Kelda, you know, being the WEAC candidate to talk about school funding and make that an element here. Joel Brennan, you know, falls into that camp of being pretty closely aligned, I would say, with Tony Evers, like a Missy Hughes or Rodriguez Barnes. I was a little surprised.
So the Tom Tiffany thing, so I talked to Rob Stafsholt after the Joint Finance Committee vote. He said that a Tiffany aide called him, raised all kinds of concerns, stopped short of saying vote against it, mm-hmm. but it was pretty clear that Tiffany was lobbying people. So I'm wondering, the governor's people have said Tom Tiffany nuked this thing. It was all his fault that went down. At the same time, though, I go do some vote counting. So in the Assembly, 51 Republicans voted yes. In the Senate, 15 Republicans voted yes. So if Tom Tiffany was driving the train, wouldn't more of them voted no? Or a Republican saying, we don't really think it's a good bet you'll be governor in January because of the environment. We're going to look best for us politically, not maybe save some money for you to do what you might be able to do if you can win in a very bad environment. Is that a decent read, or what do you see going
on? No, I think so. I think what Tom Tiffany may have done is just drop a little chaos bomb into the discussions, right? You know, throughout the day, did the vote change, you know, dramatically from what it was at the beginning of the day? No. Was it changing throughout the day? Maybe. I mean, I was hearing mm-hmm. four or five, you know, potentially against it throughout the day, and that list was maybe changing as he spoke. So did he give Republicans something to think about, something to say, well, maybe I'm not so sure, and again, throw things into a little bit of chaos? Yeah, I think it was interesting that he did go that step beyond just saying, that his first comments against it were, I wouldn't vote for it, I don't like it, but I can understand why some Republicans fight. To then go a step beyond that and start making those calls, I think was interesting, and maybe does give Democrats some fodder against him to say, Tom Tiffany didn't want this to happen.
So now let's transition from Tom Tiffany and this deal to Tom Tiffany and Tommy Thompson. So last week after the show was recorded, taped, Tommy Thompson came to grips with reality. He was not going to run for governor. I mean, we've heard this chatter about Tommy for, I think, picked up late last summer. It never seemed real to me because he did this in 2006 and 2010 and 2022. He did run for Senate in 2012,
sure.
But the record has not been great about Tommy Thompson making a comeback to becoming Governor Thompson again. But then it seems like the people around him had told him enough, this is not going to happen. There was an infrastructure to do what called the blocking and tackling of running a campaign, like collecting nomination papers. Who's going to do that for Tommy Thompson? And so Tommy comes out with a statement late Friday saying that Tom Tiffany, at this critical moment, he's the right leader for Wisconsin's future, and I look forward to campaigning for him, all Republicans across the state this November. Jesse, what's this do for Tom Tiffany? Is this the unifying moment he needs with the endorsement vote at convention this weekend, or is this take away any big hurdles he has to become the GOP nominee?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, not a lot of people really expected Tommy Thompson to get in the race, but it did continue to then raise the questions of, well, who else feels that way? You know, who else feels that Tom Tiffany maybe it doesn't have, you know, what it takes in whatever part of the state, or, you know, whatever was giving Tommy Thompson that little bit of glimmer that he needed to keep having those conversations. It takes that out of the equation. And we've got the convention this weekend, you know, where we expect, it ties it up, it dots the I's and crosses the T's before he can move forward and, you know, presumably, again, yeah, sends that united message.
We've both talked to Republican operatives who have doubts about Tom Tiffany, if he can win this fall. You know, the whole MAGA thing, they don't like about that. They worry about Southeast Wisconsin. They've got nobody else at this point. The fine deadline is June 1st. There's no obvious alternative to Tom, so he's going to be the nominee, it looks like, barring some coming crazy. Now, even though we're talking about the 2026 elections, we can't ever stop talking about 2020. There have been a number of reports, especially the Journal Sentinel, about the FBI, US DOJ, and poking around about the 2020 election. One thing we saw was from Milwaukee County Clerk George Christensen this week. They said that the FBI official went to the private home of a top election official in Milwaukee County, left a card. You know, lots of statements about we're going to defend the democracy and the right to vote and all these kinds of things. I've seen other reports from you guys about who they've reached out to. What is going on, Jesse? Like, what is this all about other than Donald Trump can't accept he lost Wisconsin in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, the conversation just won't go away. It doesn't seem like we've seen indications that this is going much deeper than anything we've reported. It seems like it's, you know, leaving a business card isn't a terribly aggressive move, right? So it seems like they want to have some conversations. I don't know if this is something where they, you know, they want to just kind of tie it up and say, hey, we've had our conversations, we've answered our questions, we can move on now. It definitely does galvanize Democrats when they hear the FBI's poking around. You do hear from, you know, pretty much every Democratic official. It's another reminder that Donald Trump hasn't let this go and that there are, you know, still people who didn't haven't let it go and who participated in raising those doubts throughout the process. But yeah, I mean, we haven't seen indications that this is something more serious than this top level conversation at this point.
I think there's one fear in Milwaukee that usually ballots from 2020 would be destroyed by now. We don't keep paper forever in this state. There are about 180,000 ballots from 2020 that are still sitting somewhere because of a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And there's this fear I've heard about that if the feds went after those, they could figure out who've cast those ballots, which the whole right to privacy in the ballot booth kind of thing would go out the window. But that's something to keep in mind. And are you watching anything for anything there with that?
Yeah, I think that's the more serious question here is because those ballots were kept and, you know, what was the process around that? Was everything, you know, done the way it's supposed to be? And could the FBI, as you mentioned, theoretically make those connections? And it's a concern. I think it's still being sorted out, but that element, I almost view it as sort of separate to some of these other conversations that are being had.
Well, we have to mention the courts because it's not Wisconsin politics without a week in the courts, so let's just do a quick rundown of everything that happened this week. So, one, Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty sues overturned the de facto conversion therapy we have in Wisconsin. League of Women Voters has filed a challenge to state law giving clerks discretion over notifying voters of problems with their absentee ballot envelopes. We've got Republican lawmakers filing a notice of appeal in Dane County after a judge ruled that governors can publish administrative rules before standing committees finish their review. And a state appeals court upheld the conviction of Kimberly Zapata, the former Milwaukee elections official who requested military absentee ballots in 2020 using a fictitious name. So of these four, Jesse, which is the most consequential to you?
That's a good question. I think the absentee ballot thing is worth paying attention to. It seems like it's one of those things where, like, the Elections Commission kind of had its hands tied in terms of issuing the directive that it had to tell, you know, the local officials what to do with these ballots, and this could maybe lead to a law change that, you know, that they're seeking, I would say, in this situation. The conversion therapy one, too, though, I want to say is that's tied to so many other conversations and lawsuits in the state regarding, you know, the state's administrative rule power. So that could have widespread implications, too.
Yeah, I get the impression that will one make a little more attention because of what it's dealing with.
Yeah.
But the more consequential one is this, what's the standard going to be for absentee ballots? Because we have a close race against this fall that could hinge upon how many ballots get counted versus how many that do not. So to wrap up this week's show, I interviewed Brian Schimming about the convention, which starts for Republicans in Wisconsin Dells tonight. We can't go tonight. It's closed to the media. Mm-hmm. Saturday, though, is wide open. There are going to be speeches galore. There's going to be an endorsement vote. For those at home who want to watch, you can check out Wisconsin Eye. During the endorsement process, only one race is contested for lieutenant governor with Will Martin, David Varnum. Yeah. The rest are uncontested. So Tom Tiffany is the only candidate in the hopper for the party's endorsement for governor. John Leiber, the only one for treasurer. So not too sexy there, not too crazy, but LG1 might be interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of watching for the reaction of Brian Schimming. He's gone through a rough patch here with party leadership. Their activists were unhappy with him. That could be interesting to watch. But two, is this going to be the Tom Tiffany moment where the party coalesces behind him? He becomes the de facto leader of the party from now until the election at least, and maybe that might help the fundraising issues they've had. But to wrap up the show, we're going to watch this interview. But first, I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
Thanks for watching this week and enjoy this interview with Brian Schimming. We'll see you next week on Rewind. Brian, I first want to ask you, kind of give me the state of the party. You know, let's lay the land for Republican Party of Wisconsin.
That's good. I'm looking forward to this convention this weekend. I've been traveling the state quite a bit, and the mood out there is good. It's interesting because you go, November elections, it's now changed, right? It used to be in the off years, Republicans would do a little bit better, and now it's definitely in the higher turnout years. We see that not only in Wisconsin, but we see it across the country. I see it in the Midwestern states. I'm also, in addition to being chair of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, I'm chair of the Midwest states for the RNC. And so that's kind of a topic of conversation sometimes. And so we're the mood is good on the governor's race and on the attorney general's race. And it's really kind of what's interesting is it's very different from 4 years ago in the respect that, being honest about it, we had a tough primary going 4 years ago for governor and for attorney general as well. And so that kind of just took so much oxygen out of the room that, and whereas this time now we've got, we're in clean situations in both the governor's race and the attorney general's race. And that, I cannot tell you how helpful that is to be able to have that focus.
What's going to be your message to activists at the convention this weekend?
Yeah, the message is start early. The message is we can't wait for anything. As you know, I was the first Republican state chairman of the country to come out for early vote. It seems like when I was talking about that a couple of years ago, I was kind of running around the state with a pan and a spoon, because that's not something generally that Republicans love doing is early vote. And the president, as you know, JR, was not a big early vote fan, but I went to dozens of counties talking about early vote, which allowed me to also just talk about getting out there early and working early in these races. And so now when I go out to crowds as I travel the state every weekend and sometimes during the week, I hear it back. Lots of people, I can't even tell you how many people who voted early who haven't done that before. So part of it is just it's time to go early. April is not November. And we're in a better situation. As I look back at state primaries, gubernatorial primaries over the years, I think we're in the best shape we are in 24 years, literally.
What is a party pitching to donors in terms of what you guys are building for a GOTV operation or an initiative? What do you guys have to sell of why you're going to be a factor in this fall's races?
Yeah, we're going to be a major factor in these fall's races. Look, Wisconsin was the toughest state in the country. Of the swing states, Wisconsin was the toughest of the seven swings. And I was saying all along when people were saying, oh, we're not sure that President Trump can come back and win Wisconsin. I was saying all along, I know he can win Wisconsin if we build the right organization, we're able to raise the right money to do that race and to do election integrity operations throughout the state. We have very much of the same situation that we're going into now that we went into in the Trump race. Money fundraising has taken a pretty good uptick here. So I'm actually very confident about our ability to raise money to help statewide candidates. Secondly, we are going to have an election integrity operation that is second to none in the country. We already have recruited over 5,000 volunteers statewide for our election integrity poll worker operation and poll watcher operation, but we're kicking off a new effort on recruiting volunteers throughout the state and coalition building throughout the state. I literally was just on a briefing call about that. That was exciting, very exciting. So a lot of those signals that we need to go the right way, as they did in 2024, are going the right way right now.
So of the Senate, the Assembly, and the Governor's Office, which would be the toughest for you guys to win this fall?
Yeah, so what I would say, I feel great about the governor's race and the AG's race right now. Number one, because our candidates are positioned well. Obviously, Tom Tiffany's positioned well. The polling shows it. In the attorney general's race, we almost beat the Democrat incumbent 4 years ago. Assembly, if I had to bet, the Assembly stays at like 52 to 54 seats. The Senate is very winnable. I just got a briefing on the Senate races. They've got some really exciting candidates out there, including in districts that I've worked in before in Eau Claire. I think Howard Markline is going to be very strong in southeastern Wisconsin. I think people naturally look at the Senate a little bit more because the new map and because the incumbent retirements than they would the Assembly. But I feel confident we can win both of them. But battlegrounds, no doubt. And I never assume anything. I've been around this for a long time. I used to run the Assembly campaign operation. I've been involved in the Senate side and statewide. And I'm growingly optimistic about where we're at.
You know, there's a new effort, it seems like, to pressure you or after you like every few weeks. How does the party operate effectively when you have this, whether you call it a rift or a small segment of malcontents, whatever it is, right? There's always this kind of push about Brian Schimming. How does the party operate when you've got that kind of environment in the leadership positions of the GOP?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's overall a relatively small group of folks who, you know, some of them don't like the changes I've made. Some of them have not, you know, it's not necessarily one group of folks wrapped around a couple of sets of issues. But I will tell you this, it has not slowed us down in terms of what our mission is and what we're doing on turnout and voter ID and voter modeling and the functions of the party. So it's not, you know, it's kind of inside baseball for a lot of folks. I will tell you, though, as you know, I travel the state very, very extensively, and the support out there has been terrific. The people I've talked to that are coming to convention is terrific. I'm pleased to have the support of President Trump, which is 100% from the president and the candidates and things like that. It's really been good that way. So I always tell folks, let's fight the Democrats and not let internal discussions overwhelm. And really, this should be, and it's kind of interesting on the scheduling, because our convention, we is, you know, what was it, 4 years ago, we had all these primaries and convention votes and all that sort of thing. I don't think we're going to have any of those troubles at this convention. We're going to go out unified with Tom Tiffany and Eric Toney.
So I'll get you on this one, Brian. The elections are held every 2 years for party leadership positions. That would be in December, most likely, for you guys. Will you run for another two-year term? And if what will determine if you decide to run for another 2 years?
Yeah, so I haven't said much about that issue yet. I am completely and totally focused on the people who are running right now, which is Tom Tiffany and Eric Toney. That honestly, it's my complete focus. I literally will not even think about that until afterwards. And there's a reason for that. I've been in this game for a long, long time through various party controversies and candidates and primaries and losses and wins and all that sort of thing. And, you know, I was told a long time ago, got the advice a long time ago, don't think about that stuff until, you know, it gets to that moment. So I'll wait, but our focus around here is getting the win, and the situation we're in right now with Tom Tiffany, which with a pretty strong hand, and the Democrats in a remarkably bad primary. Now eight people, I guess, in the Democratic primary for governor. That is the worst situation they've been in over a generation. They know it, and so they want to stir all sorts of whatever they can run around yelling about Donald Trump or me or whatever, but they are in a horrible situation in their primary where they're, at least right now, their polling leader Representative Hong is literally a socialist and willing to let anything, it seems, tumble out of her mouth, including still talking about defunding the police. And their second runner-up, Mandela Barnes, they spent $100 million on Mandela. People forget this. They spent $100 million on Mandela Barnes 3.5 years ago, and he has 11% to show for it. That's a I'd be embarrassed by that. Their convention, I know, is coming up, I think, next month, and they have a crisis, a literal crisis in the Democratic Party in their Democratic primary for governor, there, which is, as you know, is the top, you know, we don't have any federal races on top of the ballot this year for the first time since 2014, I think, no presidential and no U.S. Senate race. So they have a literal disaster on there, and I know a lot of Democrats. I'm a Republican who grew up in Madison, so I know a lot of Democrats. And all the Democrats I talk to are sweating bullets about the Democratic primary and what a mess it is and how Tom Tiffany is going to perform against them, and they have a reason to be sweating.
Great. Brian, thanks for the time. Thanks for joining us on Rewind. We appreciate it.
Hey,
this program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.